Good morning, everyone. It's Spillow here, Brad Spillane, the Men's Mental Health Show. We've got a couple of guests in here today. Actually, I've got Christian Mortensen and Blue Phillips, the General and the Muz. And just before we sort of kickstart things, of course, just like to say a big thanks to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry of all your staffing solutions. Give Craig Beachy a call, 0416 700 870. Big thanks to Mounties Group as well for sponsoring the Men's Mental Health Show from pretty much day one. They've been on board with us. A couple of things happening in the community. Walk It Off, which is, of course, the walkers that get together down there on a Wednesday at Springwood. They meet at the bunker, doing some terrific things in the community. They're branching out. I think they got a contact through the show here, through Chris Edwards or Chris Daniels, who's on next week, to start one up in Adelaide. So it's good to see we're reaching far and wide here through RBM and the podcast of the Men's Mental Health Show. And Be To Body, don't forget the Manuka honey, my family honey. I'm running a bit late today. I've had a bit of a horrid night's sleep. I've had to juice up on a painkiller this morning, but I'm feeling okay now, boys.
We're both in that same space. I worked night shift last night.
Oh, did you?
Do we need to gaffer tape you to the chair, mate, to keep you
with a 2x4 down your back?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a good show. Good show last week with John. Yeah. I thought it's always a good discussion with John. He's he likes to challenge. He likes to test us. And so kudos to Johnny Millen, of course, who's a mental health coach. He's a life coach. Give him a call. He doesn't like me handing out his number, but I'm going to. 0422 672 049, 0422 672 049. If you need someone to have a chat to, sort some stuff out in your life, get on board with things.
And he'll certainly have a conversation with you if you offer a mountain high pie.
Don't forget the mountain high
pie. We went for mountain high pie afterwards. It was delicious. Yeah. They're fantastic.
Yeah. I know. And I almost did my little trick as we were leaving. There was a couple of uniformed police officers sitting inside, and as I walked past, I sometimes do the bolt, see the coppers, and I run.
Yeah, just to test them.
Just to see if they're, on the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't do it this time. So it's the Men's Mental Health Show, of course, here, RBM 89.1, and I threw it out to Bluey yesterday, of course, to see what we could talk about. And, of course, we lost three of us, a good close mate.
Yeah, we did.
You know, my sidekick and your baddie badminton partner or opponent a lot of the time. I'd like to get an update on that and see who's the victim these days on the other side of the court.
Well, anyone who's on the other side of the net.
Of course, Bodie Marsden, of course, passed away on the 5th of January. It was it's left a massive hole in the community. Ooh, he's reached, far and wide. And, it seems just like yesterday, that he left us. But
yeah, it was just yesterday, literally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a massive hole, and, I keep in touch with Annette and to see how she's going. She's just gone camping. But anyway, I threw it out to Bluey, I said, what do we talk about here today? And I know we've spoken in the past about checkups and, heart attacks and signs and everything else. So we might sort of cover a little bit more of that as well, but the importance of doing that.
Good idea.
Yeah.
We can't underestimate it. It's something that we need all as men, as people, as consciousness living in bodies that can fail over time. And often, we get pre-warning and there are signs that things are not right. We can, if we're aware of these things and if we pay attention to them, then we can address them early.
Exactly. Right? And I think, sorry, Blue, Bodie was 74, but fit, mate. I mean, he was as fit as a 50-year-old.
And therein lies the danger, Like I used to run long distances competitively, like marathons and ultras. And, if you get someone that's not fit at all, they'll wake up in the morning and they'll go, oh, that shouldn't be there. But, like a marathoner is dealing with, pain all the time. Like, one of my mentors, Rob DiCostello, he's written a number of books, and he'd say a good marathoner wakes up tired and he goes to bed very tired, So you always got little niggles, you always got, you always got pain somewhere. Footballers are the same. Yeah. They never wake up completely right. Something's 90%. And But if you're fit like Bodie was, and like, you know, like a number of us are, you know, like Monday morning you wake up and you're, I did go for a really hard smash, or, you know, we did play two particularly fit young opponents yesterday. So, you know what I mean? You can mask it. So fit people have to be really careful. And I honestly think in Bodie's case, and I discussed this with, you know, Bodie's son Josh and with, you know, Annette, I think if Bodie hadn't played baddie, and the other interesting thing is that a number of us in deference to baddie, we're calling it Bodminton.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. So we get up there in our little WhatsApp group. Yeah, we're going up for a hit of Bodminton, you know. B-O-U-D, Minton, Bodminton. Yeah. So
you'd be swimming in that now.
I think, if I think if Bodes hadn't played baddie, I think we would have lost him about 10 or 12 years ago.
Quite
given
possibly.
That damage or that calcification, you know, to the heart, you know, we would have lost him years before. So, you know, we have to be eternally grateful for that.
Yeah.
But the other thing I want to mention is, you know, despite the fact that we sometimes give off the vibe that we're not and we don't want it, blokes listen to other blokes. And so I think for, you know, for men's mental health in particular, you know, we've got to be talking to our mates. We've got to be talking to our blokes. And like, you know, for example, when we went to The Rock, you know, consider Bodie's rule funeral, a church you're building, that's not Bodie.
Yeah.
It was good we had to say some things, and that's where the families go and that's where people go who didn't sort of necessarily know him well enough to go out to The Rock. A bunch of us got together there and we sort of promised each other, you know, with a solemn handshake, and we looked each other in the eye, which is the essence of blokeness, really. That we would go and have a heart check, or we would go and get our bloods done, or we would go and at least
do an ECG stress test.
Take those initial steps. And I've been circulating that amongst my wider family as well. And like, for example, my son-in-law, who's only in his early 50s in London, he's gone, geez, I better get off my ass. He's gone and got his heart checked.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got, so, you know, the ripples, and then he's got mates that he's talking to and they're going, mate, I never even thought of it. And so, you know, they're going and they're getting their hearts checked. It's like a program in honour of Shane Warne. They're doing it, like the MCG in particular.
Yeah.
And they're catching people as they come in for a free, you know, quick and dirty heart check. Yeah. They've caught thousands of blokes.
Well, mate, at 42.
Who are walking around with a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not going to tick forever. Yeah. And they've just gone, whoa, thanks for that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think if there was ever a campaign by the government, state or federal, to have someone who was the face of being asymptomatic, it would have to be Bodie Masson.
You
would not know. You would not know. And the only way you know, like you wake up and you got a little mole on your arm.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
That could be killing you, mate.
Yeah.
Well, something that you think's only a freckle, it's a bloody malignant melanoma.
That's right.
And you can't pick it, your wife won't pick it. You have to go and get a proper skin check. And that's the other thing we're doing, you know, like a whole bunch of my mates, you know, bushwalkers and canyoners and all kinds of other, you know, crazy interests that we're into. They're going, Jesus, mate, I haven't had my skin checked ever in my life. What, mate? You're a golfer. You play tennis.
Well,
you go canyoning. And get your skin checked.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
I'm 84 kilos, right, or thereabouts. So at 42, one of my many trips into emergency for, you know, pain breakout, and they've connected me to the machine. And the next thing, they brought a cardiologist in and they've done a dye test, and I was like, what's going on here? And they said, mate, you've got 55% calcification. It's no need to worry. But we've picked that up through the ECG or your triglycerides or whatever.
And you can get it through a blood test
but,
as well.
But, you know, I wasn't overweight. I was 42. I smoked. But it's in the family. So,
there you go.
You know, I'm looking at probably mid-50s. I don't think they put stents in now until around 80% or thereabouts.
Yeah, it's about 80%. If you're symptomatic and depending on where it is and what your risk factors are. But, yes, they'll address that. And you've raised some important points there, both of you, some very important points. First of all, genetics. And we each of us carry a genetic heritage with us, and that's inescapable. And
you can't outrun your genes.
You can't outrun your genes. If you have a family history of heart disease in your family, and we're talking about the heart disease that affects people under the age of 55. So if you have had, and the test that we typically use is, if you've got a first-degree relative, that means your mother or your father, your brother or your sister, with heart disease or a stroke, as in cardiovascular disease, under the age of 55, then you're at risk.
Yeah.
And you need to address it.
Yeah. That's exactly what.
So we're not talking Professor about, Holloway, my cardiologist, you know, dad said, lived all the way till he was 90 and he had a heart attack. No, that's actually longevity. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if you've got a first degree relative, brother, sister, mother or father with heart disease under the age of 55, then you need to go get a checkup. And to the point where we've had identical twins. We've had identical twins on two consecutive days have the same heart attack.
Oh,
sorry. So, you know, side by side and end up in bed sort of in the same ward in the hospital. Yeah. I've also seen, I've gone to jobs where a man has died from a heart attack and in chatting to the family, the wife said, I knew this was going to happen. His father died at that age and his brother died at that age. They all died at age, and I think it was something along the line of 56 years old.
My grandfather was 54, I beg your pardon, and my uncle had a heart attack at 54.
You'd need to be right on
55
or 54. So that's why you need to be right on it. All it takes is you picking up the phone and making a booking with your general practitioner.
So did you do a test? You went and did. Just talk us through that. And thanks, Christian. Well, just for the listeners that aren't aware, Christian's a paramedic. Intensive care paramedic. That's right. So just to fill the listeners
in. I take people canyoning and cause the paramedics to be busy.
and they are great jobs too. Jobs. Yeah. Not for the reasons you think.
Yeah. Look, I've got a doctor that I don't, see and annoy, every week. But when I do see him, I generally have a little shopping list so I don't forget because missus will say, "Hey, did you? Oh, forgot that one." But anyway, let me digress for a minute, and I'll tell you where I'm coming from with this. About years and years and years ago, I think I turned 25, and I got a great birthday card from a mate. And it was in, bullshit made-up German. And I've never forgotten it because it said, the trouble with us is that we get too soon old and too late smart. So we get smart too late. So about the same time, I heard this great analogy by a young army doctor. In the army, they don't do anything with them. They let them get their degree. They let them become a doctor. And then they recruit them straight into the rank of, captain or major. And, they live in the officer's mess and they do very well.
I've actually got a couple of mates who've gone down pathway.
Done that route. Anyway, I was chatting to this bloke, when I got commissioned in Tassie from warrant officer, and he was saying, mate, the trouble is with blokes, they need to think like their car. And he gave the analogy that, and my son-in-law was bad at this.
Yeah.
You're driving along and clunkety-clunk, what's that? And my son-in-law would actually stop and he'd check in the glove box, he'd check in the back. And if there was a noise in the car, he just could not. It drove my daughter insane.
Yeah.
And he would find the rattle and he would shut it down.
On that bloke.
Or he would flag it or earmark it to get it done.
Yeah.
And they said, that's what blokes need to do with their health. Yeah. They'd say, I don't know what that is. And they'd say, and this doctor, and he was only young too, he was only in his 20s. And he said, we need to get blokes to think like you got a problem with your car, you put it on the hydraulic jack and you have a look and you find out what the issue is. In other words, you have a look underneath. Mm. So, I think the equivalent for us blokes is sometimes you've got to be honest enough to say, hey, doc, can you lift the bonnet?
Yeah.
See what's under there.
Yeah.
And it might be the most nefarious thing. So I'll probably see my doctor once or twice a year, but when I do, we have this thing where I go in like in the first few months of the year. And I've got the script here thing with me today. I'm going to fast tonight and go in and get the blood checked. Like the shopping list as long as your arm.
Yeah.
But it's just list tits for. What do I need to know, I'd say to my bloke, what do I need to know as a 74-year-old, 75 in August, what should I get tested for warning markers or signs in my blood and urine and feces and all that sort of stuff. So there's like an annual shopping list. So the way I see that is opening the lid and he said, Blue, you're on the right track, mate, because he says there's so much we can tell these days from your blood and from other fluids that it's just a very, very early warning indicator. And he says if we need to see a heart specialist, then that'll be the next step. And if we need to see someone else. So I know, having had, those heart checks every year and all those blood tests, if there's something that we need to be onto, I'm using the royal we here, he's got all the evidence and the data. and you know, we're onto it. And for me, that's a great relief. And coupled with that, I get my skin checked at least a couple of times a year too, because you know, brought up in Adelaide, where it's stinking hot, and my fair, we used to sleep on the beach. We sleep under the jetty, you know, at Semaphore or Port Adelaide. Wow. You know, we just take blankets and a pillow, and we'd like literally sleep under the under the jetty in the shade. And in the day, you're out in the sun. And my memory of primary school in Adelaide is, oh, don't touch me, don't touch me.
Yeah.
You know, so what I'm waiting for them to develop, you know, talking about melanomas and skin check, which is the other thing. I've got blokes made in their 70s, my mates, some of them. Never had a bloody skin check in their life, and they play tennis and golf. I mean, they're just waiting to happen. They're just an accident waiting to happen.
Because we've got quite olive skin.
What I need is something that I can protect my eyes with, and I need to go through a sheep dip every year, and for stuff to just go pop, 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 and anything that doesn't pop, they cut out, you know, or burn off with, you know, this liquid nitrogen. But you know. Do I know that I'm never going to develop any more melanomas? And I've had a few cut out and other sunspots. No, I don't. That's why I go in for regular checks.
Did you? Did they get spotted because you spotted them, or because you had a skin check and they were spotted?
I was lucky enough to spend my working life in the army, and you get annual medicals. Yeah, and you're very thorough with that sort of stuff. Right. So they'd say, "Whoa, get that one. We got to get that one done." Or you know, you go like even hearing and sight and you know, heart tests would be part of that annual regime. So I'm a bit lucky there. But blokes that are at risk in the army, everybody gets their annual medical, and then if you don't come through that, then you've got, you know, there's steps that they do to bring you back up to speed, or you get medically downgraded and ultimately discharged. But people, for example, that they pick up, they've got a heart issue, they'll have more intensive care and treatment and tests and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I was a bit lucky, and and so with that kind of regular check, regime, like my fitness, I've kept that going because it was ingrained in me after, you know, my quick work experience experiment of only 50 years and 4 months.
50 years in the ADF.
Yeah. Well, the 4 months was tough.
Yeah.
So that's why I think I'm in a position of advantage, and I make sure that other people like my civilian mates who might be, you know, self-employed builders or something, and they've spent their life on building sites, they have to have, I think, someone like me or...
Someone to advocate for it.
Someone who says, mate, I just come back from my skin check and I've had a melanoma cut off. When did you have yours last done? And they go... And it's interesting because you look at their wives and their wives will just put their hands up flabbergasted and say, mate, you've got to get through to him because I can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just have to go and make that first... Like, there's a bloke in our band we've been harassing, you know, and... he's got other health issues that he's right on top of, but you know, he's actively looking for a skin specialist to go and get his skin checked because
well, you
we're
can get them
it.
Done here just, in Katoomba.
Yeah, you can.
You
just
know,
go to
your
GP,
just shop around.
GP does. So I've got the machine.
Find a good general practitioner, someone who you resonate with. That's step number one. Then essentially you have to go in and say, look, it's been a while, or I haven't had a checkup. I need a checkup. They'll draw blood.
Yeah, they'll
or
do
they'll
blood
send you over to a pathology service. They'll draw blood from you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that can be told, you know. They they can check your prostate through that blood. They can check your triglycerides. They can check your liver enzymes.
They can check my prostate through that blood, so I didn't have to go through
No double gloving anymore.
Mate, I had a serious issue.
My doctor years ago used to call it the intelligent finger. 6 years at uni for the intelligent finger.
Yeah, well, I had to get it and I thought I was certain I had something wrong.
Yeah.
And he said, no, it's all clear. I said, I'm getting a second opinion. So used the second finger.
And then a third.
It's like Billy Connolly famously said, as soon as a bloke turns 60, his doctor doesn't look at your face, he's only used to your back end.
That's right. But getting back to it, and let's continue along what happens.
Anyway, go get the blood tests and then, you know, if they want to. What they'll do is they'll run through a clinical history with you and they'll ask you about things like, you know, have you had chest pain? Do you get short of breath? Do you get fatigued easily? What's your fitness regime? What's your alcohol intake?
What's your diet like?
What's your diet like? Yeah. Are you using recreational drugs? What's your family history? So there's a lot that can be derived just by having a conversation with you and with the doctor. And then they can tailor the tests according to what is required.
Yeah.
Now, depending on what is going on with you, which it also includes mental health related stuff as well.
Always important to be extremely honest too.
Yeah, exactly. With you know, and be and that you have a good relationship with your GP and that you're prepared to open up to them. We would we often go to people where I am going to do a 12-lead ECG where I'm looking at the heart, where I hook them up to the monitor to have a look at what's going on, and maybe even just to rule out the possibility of something cardiac. And I find that they've had a previous heart attack.
Wow.
And they don't even know.
They don't even know.
The blood will pick it up.
Yeah, well, the blood, if you're taking the blood at the time, the blood will pick it up.
Yeah.
We had just recently a patient who presented to the hospital with vomiting and nausea. And in going through the blood test, they realised he had a troponin leak. Which is essentially cardiac damage that's occurring.
Right.
The ECG looked okay, but the blood work showed that there was cardiac damage that was occurring. And then it was like, well, is this as a result of a minor heart attack?
Right.
What we call a non-STEMI, a non-ST elevation myocardial infarction.
That's exactly what I had.
A non-STEMI.
Yep.
Non-STEMI is what you might call a minor heart attack. Where there's
that's
complete
what they said.
Blockage,
that's what she said to me.
But there's damage occurring to the heart muscle.
Yeah.
And when that damage occurs in the heart muscle, we may not see it on the ECG, which usually tends to show stuff which is more severe. But what it does, the blood work will pick up and it says, look, there's the damage, the tissues are being damaged.
Right.
So anyway, as it turns out, his tissues were being damaged. Sometimes that's viral, sometimes it's bacterial, sometimes it's as a result of a blockage or what we call an ischemic event where the blockage is depriving the heart muscle of oxygen. So go get, you know, now where do we get those things addressed? Well, if we're just getting the checkup, we get it addressed at the GP. Okay. If you are actively having chest pain, you are short of breath, you're going for a walk and you've got discomfort in your chest or your neck or your jaw or your back or your shoulders or down your arms, specifically down the left side, but it can also be the right side. In fact, interesting, we were talking to, and at any age, I was talking to a paramedic last night down at Nepean, who had a patient who was 42 years old, who became profoundly sweaty. Had a sense of impending doom, knew that something was wrong, called Triple O, had right-sided, right arm, right chest and right back pain. Called, and then they put him on the monitor and bang, straight away they could see he was having a massive cardiac event, huge heart attack. He went into a shockable rhythm, lost consciousness. Now, that was if they hadn't have been there at that time, that was it. That would have been curtains for him, but they were there. The paramedics were there on scene, hooked him up to the machine, shocked him, and then ended up having to shock him another 10 times to get him out of that rhythm whilst giving him medication to stabilise the membranes of the heart and stabilise the heart muscle. And eventually got return of circulation. Now, he's as I understand, still profoundly unwell in intensive care, but he's alive. And we'll wait and see then what happens after that. Now, he was a heavy smoker. He was 20 a day, this guy. But had they not made that initial call, there would have been no two ways about it. He would have died in his house.
So 25 years ago, 20 a day would have been considered a light smoker.
He was
light one off the other. He would have gone through two or three a day.
I think, the key for me, for what I've noticed, and particularly for men as opposed to, you know, the dominant sex, we get complacent.
Yeah, we do.
You know, and I think that with that complacency, and especially up here in the lifestyle we have in the mountains, I think we're a little bit more laid back and alternative, I guess. And, you know, we think, oh, yeah, well, I'll look after myself by just going through diet if I eat. Well, of course, that has nothing to do with it a lot of the time.
In Bodhi's case, eat well,
may have got a little bit complacent, because he did have his morning. He wasn't a big drinker. Right. So the other thing that we've mentioned when we've previously spoken about this is defibs, defibrillators.
Yes.
And it's a good idea if you get together in your street or something and you try and, because I think they give you one for, you know, for your neighbourhood. So
they're a wonderful community access program.
I've heard of that too. Just, almost like the, you know, the RFS remote. Or, you know, I think they're called a CFU. They'll put like a trailer in a cul-de-sac, and they expect that everyone in the cul-de-sac has training on it and they're good to go. So it's like an immediate community asset.
They're good. Interesting. Tell the listeners the difference between, you know, a DFib
So what is a defibrillator? Yeah. So defibrillator is a battery pack.
Right.
Basically, it's attached to a computer,
right.
Which can interpret the heart rhythm. In that battery pack, when you open it up, they're very user-friendly. They actually guide you through. They're automatic.
It's an annoying American accent.
Yeah, usually in an annoying American accent. And essentially, they're applied to people who are unconscious, who are not showing signs of life, with abnormal breathing. Now, not everyone who goes into cardiac arrest, now this is an important point, not everyone who goes into cardiac arrest just stop breathing flat.
No.
Sometimes they go through a process what we call agonal breathing, which is ineffective breathing where the sort of they look like they're trying to breathe like a goldfish out of water,
right.
Where they're making gasping motions with their mouth, but there's no air moving in and out right now. So if you've got a person who is unconscious, not breathing properly and showing no signs of life, as in they're not sitting up and talking to you, then this is when we're calling 000, we're starting CPR, and we're accessing a defibrillator, all those three things. The defibrillator comes out. So, for example, that could be a community access defibrillator from the local library, the bowls club, as it was cop the shop. Other day, the cop shop, the shopping centre,
and we've had
some fantastic saves just in the last 3 months with community access defibrillators. The 000 call is made, and the 000 operator can guide you through how to do CPR. It's not that hard, right? You expose the chest. That's male and female. If it's a female, the bra comes off and is out of the way. Don't worry about modesty at this stage. This is a life-saving intervention. Chest is exposed and the pads go on. So one pad, and there's when you pull the two pads out, they're like a big sticky like a foam pad attached to wires with a backing on them. The back peels off, and you can see when you look at the pad, it shows you where to put it, right? So we use anterior lateral placement. So one pad goes on just under the right clavicle, under the right collarbone, sort of up on the side where, imagine if you put your left hand up onto your right chest under your collarbone, that's where it's going to sit. And then the other pad, if you look at the diagram, goes under the apex of the heart, which is just under the left breast on the side of the chest wall, right? And they get stuck down well. So you don't just slap it on. You almost peel it down and then push all the air bubbles out, so you're really adhering to the chest.
Almost like feeding the old rego sticker in the old days.
Yes, you really smear it on and just get it to really stick down. Machine goes on. And then the machine will typically say something along the lines of stop CPR, it's interpreting the rhythm. Now, if the rhythm is a shockable rhythm, it will say shock advised, stand clear and press to shock, and it will illuminate a button. So you make sure that the patient is clear of no one's doing CPR when you're going to shock them. So you stand back and then you hit the button and it will shock them.
Yeah.
And what will happen is that it'll deliver a shock and it'll take the heart from being in a quivering state of jelly mass into sort of, it'll clear that and allow the internal rhythm of the heart to restart. So what will happen is when you shock them, their arms will jump like they look like they've actually received an electric shock, usually around 200 joules. It'll want to reinterpret again, and it may deliver a cluster of shocks. So it may want to shock them up to three times.
Right.
And then it'll say, do CPR. So then you get back onto the chest and do CPR.
Yeah.
And the success rate with a defib as opposed to CPR is astonishing.
Much, much higher. So we're talking about out-of-hospital cardiac arrest here.
It's like 9, 10 times.
So normally the sort of the survival rate for out of hospital cardiac arrest is single digit. You know, it's less. It's certainly less than 10%, depending on where you are in the world. Strangely. But if you've got, you know, if you're further away from help, then it's going to be the survival chances are less. But you know, depending on where you are, so it's typically around 5%.
Wow.
You know, 8% maybe. But in some communities overseas where the community has come together, studied CPR and has access to community access defibrillators, the survival rates are going up to like around 30%. Massive changes, which is significant. Yeah, yeah. And simultaneously, that's all integrated into the pre-hospital care. The paramedics, we learn something called high-performance CPR, which is all about no delays, on the chest, good quality chest compressions.
And you've got to be fit and strong, man.
You know, to the right depth, about a third the depth of the chest.
Yeah.
We sing as we, you know, you can do if you want to know what rhythm you're working towards. We're saying it's about 100 compressions a minute. And the way to work that out is to sing Staying Alive in your mind. Another way that you can sing it is too, is if you just row, row, row your boat, we'll do it as well. And it'll give you the right rhythm. And you go through row, row, row your boat twice. We'll then give you 30 compressions. So, and then there's, you know, and we don't, we're not necessarily talking about ventilation at the moment. So, we're not. We used to teach compressions and ventilations, which is if you're well trained, you can be. You can be doing both 30 compressions,
30, and two.
30 to two, 30 compressions to two ventilations. But what is better, and I think they've realised, is that if we just do straight up compressions, so we're talking about the lower half of the sternum. So we identify which is the lower half of the sternum. The heel of your hand goes onto the sternum. And then you link your fingers together, you get onto your knees and you perch yourself over the top of the patient with your arms, elbows locked, and then you rock your whole upper body backwards and forwards rapidly. So singing, staying alive as you're doing it. If you've got a defibrillator there, it'll actually have a metronome. Right. It'll actually give you the rhythm to work towards.
And there's one you can set up very quickly on your phone. Well, that's another good
bystander.
Can I just mention a couple of things, because I know you're the expert in this field, but as a layman, I think there's a couple of points, because people are listening to that and they say, "Whoa, he's got all these medical terms, he's onto it," but I can't do that. I think the key thing is like if you go in and sometimes you might be sitting at home and you're about to go off in your car. And your car's already running quietly, and then you'll flick the key forward and it makes that horrible... it's already running.
Yes.
And so, the analogy with that is if you're very, very nervously in a shopping centre and some poor bastard has collapsed in front of you and you're about to use a DP for the first time...
Yes.
The danger is, as it won't let you shock...
It won't, unless... No.
If there's no...
Yes, very good point.
...shock. People say, "Oh, I might kill him. I might electrify them. I might kill him."
Yeah.
The thing won't let you proceed to
It won't shock them.
And the other thing, I just finished a come off an SES, first aid,
like a
3-year requal, and we had a training day with an excellent trainer. Shout out to Chris Dajic, who works over at the Torrens.
Good work, SES. Good work to all those volunteers.
He's, been involved in that space for a long time. And as he says, don't worry about shocking someone that doesn't need a shock, because the machine
won't
proceed to that level. The other thing is, and there was a great story in the Herald either late last year or early this year, and it talked about the fact, and this is an international issue, men are much more likely to receive... let's call it shopping centre defib action than a woman, because of that reluctance to, as you say, rip the bra off, expose the chest. It's just, blokes are very reluctant to do that, rip tear gas.
The women are less likely to receive the defibrillator.
I think the other thing that we discussed on our SES course is, and you would have seen a lot more of this than me, but nonetheless I have actually experienced this. If you get an incident in public, you will have 5 or 6 I know boats people who are don't take that helmet off, don't move him, your back might be broken, or you just got to cut through that white noise and get the job done. But in terms of privacy for a woman, and I've got to be honest, if it was my wife, I would like someone to think of this as well as saving her life, a bit of human dignity. If you get these busybodies or anyone, just task someone, because a lot of people I know, having been involved in medical incidents, are looking to help or get involved. You say, oh, you, get that jacket off, come over here and give this woman some privacy. And if it's a husband, and particularly you must have experiences. Good word there, bit of a Freudian slip.
No pun intended.
And I'm not going to mention the type of people, but if you're in somewhere like Auburn or Fairfield or Bankstown, you're highly likely to get a very sensitive issue being a bloke with a woman. Get some people involved, get some jackets off and get them to provide security.
Yes, that's right.
And you often see in the news these days when someone's getting treatment, the ambos will have a big screen set up so you can't see what's going on there. So, you know, there are very, very practical steps you can do. So as well as tasking someone to, you know, go and ring Triple O because you're busy doing the CPR until you've got the defrib set up, get someone to provide a bit of privacy screen, save a woman's life, you know, she'll forgive you for exposing the boobies as long as you, I think, you know, do a reasonable thing. The other thing that I think is really interesting is... with that whole issue is just to focus on the task and keep people around you who want to help but are a bit worried about it as busy as you can, you know. And one of the things you might do, for example, if you haven't, you know, had time to use your mobile, get someone to ring 000, put it on speaker and have it there, because a responder on the end of that line will just talk to you the whole time.
Yeah, no, they'll coach you through the whole thing.
In terms of the experts who all want to do something, and the I Know Boats people, if they can hear an expert on that phone, it's not you anymore. It's you and an expert they can hear. And it's a really good tip, I think, we got from Chris to help in a situation like that.
It's coming up to about 20 to 12. It's the Men's Mental Health Show. We're here with the General, Blue Phillips, paramedic Christian Mortensen, the Muz. We might just have a quick break. We've just got to head off to a couple of announcements. It's the Men's Mental Health Show. We'll be back in a moment. Yeah, welcome back to the Men's Mental Health Show. It's Spiller here, Brad Spillane. As I said, we're here with the General, Blue Phillips, and Christian Mortensen. And we're talking today... more on the physical side of mental health for men and for women, for everyone really. We're just talking about checkups. We lost a good close mate. Of course, I did about, I think it was close to 102 shows or so with local psychotherapist Bodie Marsden. And sadly, Bodie was taken from us on the 5th of January. He died peacefully in his sleep, but from a heart attack. And as fit as he was, I think we... You know, we're talking about complacency and where we were at. But, so just a continuation.
Yeah, so look, we were just chatting a little bit about defibrillators and CPR. Can I just say that anyone out there, if you've got chest discomfort into your... Now, not everyone has the typical signs of a heart attack, by the way. Women are usually... They can have atypical or unusual symptoms. It can be a fainting episode. It can be discomfort in their back, your neck, your jaw. It doesn't have to be central crushing chest pain
or
chest discomfort.
I think we also think it's angina a lot of the time.
It can be nausea. Yeah.
Yes.
Right? It just can be nausea. And, so look, if you've got these symptoms, it's worth your while getting them checked over at the hospital. Okay?
Not at the general practitioner,
because if you ring your GP, they're going to give you an appointment in like next
2 weeks'
Thursday.
Time.
Yeah. 2 weeks' time next Thursday. So, you know, and when you book the appointment too, you'll hear a recorded message. If you're experiencing emergency, call 000. Yeah. Well, this is an emergency. Call 000.
There's nothing more serious than a heart attack.
Yeah, so call 000. More than willing coming. We're a 24/7 service. We will come out. We're all cardiac specialists now. We can diagnose in the home. If we can't work out exactly what's going on, we'll take you to where they can work out what's going on, which is the ED, and they'll do the blood tests. And then often it comes up in the blood work, not just on the ECG, that there's something going on.
Right.
So, and then it can be dealt with directly. Unfortunately, if Bodie had called me, if he had gone into the emergency department with his chest pain, we may well have had a very different outcome.
Yeah.
And I have seen this on numerous occasions.
Sure.
And there has been also many, many occasions where I've gone to people who've been to the GP with chest discomfort. The GP has done the right thing, ordered the blood results and ordered an ECG.
Yeah.
But it's the next day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. They said, oh, well, we can get you in the next, you know, get it in, done the next day. No, it needs to happen now. Time is muscle when it comes to heart attacks. So it needs to be dealt with immediately. So that's a trip to the emergency department. And
just going back to that point I raised earlier about, you know, relatively, you know, fit people like, you know, runners and sports people and, you know, canyoners and, you know, people that are active outside and, you know, actually are fit. You can rationalise with yourself. And Bodie was the classic example. You know, oh, my chest is a bit sore. Oh, but I spent all morning on the trampoline down at Penrith with the grandson, which he had done.
And he'd thrown him imagine, up and down in the pool.
You know,
and
if you can think of anyone that's going to spend hours on a trampoline with your grandson, it'd be Bodie.
Of
you'd have to tie him down to keep him off it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, oh, but it mightn't have been that. But it might have been because I did a late walk with the dogs, which he did do as well. You know, so I think you've got to be careful not to rationalise something that you're guessing on, because the stakes are too bloody high to guess.
They're too high. And I think he thought at one point he had reflux.
Get a professional.
Yeah, so that's right.
The professional might reassure you and say, mate, that's what happened. All the evidence is there to back up what you thought. Or they might say, mate, you're way off beam and we're going to do X, Y, Z about it.
Yes,
you know? So you operate from a position of knowledge, not guessing.
That's right. And if you have chest discomfort and you go, well, it's musculoskeletal, it's because I've been throwing the grandkid sort of in the pool, that is what we would call a diagnosis of exclusion. You need to exclude a heart attack before you can say it's a problem with the chest muscle.
As in
the muscles of your pectoral muscles because you've been active.
Yeah.
You need to exclude a cardiac event, and that means the ECG and the bloods done over a 6-hour period. You're going to spend it like 6 hours in the emergency department, but it will save your life.
I remember when we last spoke about this, you know, I think the three of us, you, me, Moz and Bodie, we did an entire episode on it. And to use your words, if there is such a good thing, was you said, the wonderful thing about a heart attack is generally you're going to get a warning.
You're going to get a warning.
They're going to, it's going to set you up. And that's what did happen with Bodie. And, you know, like I've got an incave chest, whatever you want the name
pectoris
of it.
Pectoris excavatum.
Yeah. So sometimes I get chest pains or a cramp, right?
Mm.
But, and I'm familiar of that pain. So I'm pretty across it. But, you know, he had that pain and then that pain went. Because that's what happens with heart attacks. It'll come, it'll go, the warning, and then you think, oh, no, I'm all better now.
Mm.
But another example would be the lady that lives in the house where I live. She was experiencing angina, okay, and she's 81, fit, eats extremely well, Filipino heritage. My flatmate came in and I said, maybe you just, you know, give her an aspirin and see how she goes. And about 40 minutes after she had the aspirin, I said, go and check on her and let me know how she is. And she said, oh, yeah, it worked. And I said, well, that's a pretty good sign. She's probably having a heart attack. And sure enough, up she went. About 4 hours, they transferred her from Katoomba down in Nepean. But, you know, that was on the back of about 2 weeks after we did that show that, you know, I was on the ball to say, hey, man, this is...
Having aspirin in the house is very useful.
Mm. What does aspirin do?
It's an antiplatelet drug, so it makes the blood more slippery.
Okay.
Essentially. So what it does
is... there's a clot or anything, it's...
It basically inhibits the first step in the clotting cascade.
Okay.
So to develop a clot in a blood vessel, it's a 10-step process.
Right.
And one of the first steps is that blood platelets aggregate together. They become sticky. They stick together like a mesh, and they start to form a clot.
Yeah.
And aspirin inhibits that, that allows the platelets to slide over the top of each other without aggregating and forming a, what's it called, like a thrombus or like a clot. And what we're talking about here is the clot inside the blood vessel that feeds the heart muscle. So we're not talking about in the chambers of the heart. Which is pumping the blood around the body, but the blood vessels around the surface of the heart.
The pericard.
Myocardium. Myocardium, which is the heart muscle, myocardium. So it those blood vessels supply the heart muscle, which is working as the pump,
right.
And the pump needs the oxygen because it's very metabolically active. Okay. Like it's working hard. So it needs constant blood supply and constant oxygen for it to be working. So what it does is it just helps keep the blood slippery so that we're not going to then essentially develop a clot and block those vessels off.
And it also explains why even if you go in for a minor surgery, the first thing they'll ask you on the checklist is, are you on any blood thinning medication? Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you say yep, they go, oh, okay. It doesn't stop what you're going to get done, but they need to be aware of it because it's got other factors involved as well. The other thing, just going back to when we did our SES training, we got some excellent trainers down there. We're quite lucky, is that people sometimes are a bit hesitant when they're doing manual CPR, and they're saying that in most cases, if you do effective CPR, you're going to actually break some bones.
You're going to
break the sternum.
You'll break ribs and break the sternum.
And then you've got to think, well, what's the lesser of two evils? One of the blokes was saying that a paramedic was a bit late to get to the scene, and a bloke had been in a car accident and his head had slumped forward onto the steering wheel like this.
Right.
And the first thing this bloke did when he got there was say, oh, for heaven's sake, get a trigger grip and just lift his head, open his airway. And they were too late because these expert Ino Boats bystanders, don't move him. It might be a neck injury, don't touch him, and he died. And if just one of those expert Ino Boats, bystanders had thought, cut through that and say, no, that doesn't make sense. I'm going to open his airway. You watch a runner, even in the Olympics, if a track runner stops and just like gives up, what's the first thing they do? Put their hands on their hips and they open their airway and they look up.
Into the sniffing position.
If you could run doing that a bit better, you're getting enough air. So if this paramedic was telling me that if someone had just done that, here I am lifting my chin, got his chin off the steering wheel and opened it up.
Yeah.
That might have been enough to save his life. And he said he's never forgotten that, And sometimes it's just easier. And this bloke was saying, and I think, Mort will agree with this as well, this bloke that trains us for the SES, he doesn't call it first aid training anymore. He calls it self-confidence training. And he said, what we got to get used to is the fact that you just got to be confident enough to do something.
Yep.
And he says that,
That's great.
Don't worry about the manual. Any CPR is better than no CPR.
I agree.
And just be confident enough to do it,
Yeah, I agree.
And that's really good.
I agree. And funnily enough, because I've done a lot of first aid training people over the years, one of the things, and we talked earlier about how do we deal with the bystanders who are intervening when you need to get them organised.
Give them a job.
Give them a job. And one of the great ways to actually get them organised is to put on gloves, as in first aid gloves. And then if you put gloves on and you can take charge of the scene, you've got gloves on, it's almost like a symbol that you're medically prepared with some training. So what we train our first aiders to do is get gloves on and then take charge of the scene as one of the first steps.
Yeah.
So say, safe approach, make sure your approach is safe. And then once you've taken the sort of safe approach, then take charge of the scene. We do our primary survey assessment, which is the assessment of the airway. Is the airway open? Then we assess breathing and circulation. And if there is, at this stage, if their breathing is if they're not responding, safe approach, check for response. If they're not responding, we roll them on their side, open the airway, check breathing and circulation.
Sure.
If those are not happening, then we roll them onto their back. We put them on a firm surface. The other thing too is make sure that the head is level with the chest. You can't do CPR with a person sitting in a chair, okay? They've got to be lying on the ground and they can't be head uphill, okay? So if you're on a slope, move them across the slope so the head is level with the chest. Expose the chest, hand, the heels of the hands, two hands on the sternum. Mm. You're calling Triple O at the same time. They're on speakerphone. They will guide you through it, and you start the chest compressions.
Yeah.
And it's to a third of the depth of the chest, so it's quite deep.
So let's do a quick recap. We've got to we're going to have a bit of a shorter show today. I just had a call. I've been waiting to. I was on a backup list for a quick MRI, so I've got to head down to High Street. But let's just do a quick recap here. Yeah, okay. So let's make it something that we should do. Let's stick it in the calendar.
Let's do it.
Yeah, like maybe you know, once a year, like when we service the car, we service the checkup. You know,
you could ask 10 blokes, go down to the family hotel and go to the bar there and say, mate, when's your car next year for a service? And they'll say, oh, at 34,600 and I'm at 32,800. And
they would, I'm one of those
blokes. So they'll say, right, that's when my car needs servicing, and they won't go a kilometre or a day over that.
No.
And so the equivalent of that, I think, is when did you last have your heart checked? When did you last get your blood checked? When did you last have a melanoma?
I personally need the same answer.
You need
particularly blokes from the age of 40. That's what I'd be saying. Yeah, if you're 40, go and get it done.
Go get it done. Get your blood pressure. Get your bloods done. And book into your GP.
And the other thing
you don't have to. By the way, you don't have to know exactly what test you need. You just need to tell the GP, I need a checkup.
Yeah.
The GP's the expert. They'll arrange the test for you.
And there's something else that's really important too that I've discovered with a lot of my mates of late. You know, and again, blokes are very intolerant of someone that doesn't do their car properly or anything else like their stereo system. And in a heartbeat, they'll change plumbers, they'll change sparkies, they'll change their auto electrician, they'll change the bloke who does the technical stuff with the car. Mm. We need to be like that with doctors. Yeah. I was going to the wrong skin specialist and my melanoma on my lower stomach here was like exhibit A on the poster, and I kept pointing to it and they kept telling me it was like an age wart or a senile wart, and I'm thinking, mate, it's exhibit A on the poster. I went to another bloke and he just says, what are you doing this afternoon? I said, well, what do I need to do? And he says, you're going to lay down here with your shirt off and I'm going to cut that thing out, because it was a malignant melanoma. It was my wife's insistence to get out of place A and go to place B where she was going.
Yes.
And so I'm only sitting here alive now is because I, at my wife's insistence, went to another skin specialist. And if you've got the wrong doctor, and particularly I think if you've got a doctor with ego that says, oh, I can pick this, you know, with my bloke, if he doesn't know, he'll say to me, Blue, I don't know. Mm. I'm going to send you to someone who's going to find out.
Yep.
And that's what I want to hear.
Yep, yep.
You don't want someone that say, well, I didn't diagnose it, so therefore... You know, it's like that classic, you know, two doctors are in a pub and they're discussing this mate of theirs they went through uni with, and you say, oh, that, you know, that bloody John Brown, you know, he's bloody useless, you know. He's treating a patient with whooping cough and they die of malaria. And these two doctors said, well, I'm better than that, mate. He says, when I treat a patient for whooping cough, they bloody die of whooping cough.
it's a men's mental health show. I want to say a big thanks to Blue, the General, Blue Phillips, and also too to the Moors, Christian Mortensen.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
And of course, to the sponsors, to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment, labour hire, and the manufacturing industry. For all your staffing solutions, give Craig Beachy a call, 0416 700 870. The Australian Manufacturing Expedition is on next week at Darling Harbour. I'm going to head down there and give Craig a hand. If you want to come and say good day, do so. Look forward to it. But next week we've got John Millam and we've got Chris Edwards, or Chris Daniels. He goes by both names. He's the guy from Walk It Off. And we had a wonderful conversation with him last month, so really looking forward to that. But between now and then, let's not be quick to judge and give love.
Yes.
Yep. You mightn't like it, but you can't hate it. Yeah. We'll see you next week.
All the best.
Thanks gentlemen. Thanks, boys. All the best.